So let's look at the comparison between the male and the female pelvis. We see that the true pelvis is going to be not as wide in the male and wider in the female because of childbirth. We also see the pubic arch is going to be more at an angle in the male, whereas it's going to be wider in the female, once again for childbirth. When we look at the femur, we see it's the largest and heaviest bone in the body. We notice that the head of the femur is going to be shiny because it's going to be serving as an articulation. Indeed, this is the area that articulates with the acetabulum of the pelvis. Also, when we look at the head of the femur, we can see that we have a fovea capitis. The fovea is going to be the area where we're going to have blood vessels going in and out of the head of the femur, and that's going to assist them in getting nutrients there and back again. We also have a ligament that's going to be coming out of the fovea that will assist in the stability of the femur in the acetabulum. We see that we have more distally the greater and lesser trochanter, and this is going to be an attachment for muscle. When we looked at the humerus, we saw it also had the sort of processes. We didn't call them trochanters, rather we called them tubercles. So we had a greater and lesser tubercle. Now, when we look at the posterior part of the femur, we see between the greater and lesser tubercle that we have a ridge, and that ridge is going to be called the intertrochanteric ridge. Whereas when we look anterior, we see that between the two greater and lesser trochanters, we have a line, so that's going to be the intertrochanteric line. Now, in the posterior as well of the femur, we're going to be seeing that there's going to be a line that's going to be going all the way, basically, through the whole shaft of the femur, and that's going to be called the linea aspera. Linea for line and aspera for rough. So it's a rough line that's going to be posterior on the femur. Also, the medial and lateral condyles are going to be found distally. These also are going to be shiny. That tells us they're going to be articulations. They're going to be articulating with the tibia inferiorly, or shall we say distally. We also have a smooth patellar surface on the anterior part of the humerus for the articulation of the patella, or the kneecap. When we look at the knee, we see that we have a femur superiorly, we have a tibia inferiorly, and we have a patella anteriorly. And the patella lies anterior to the knee joint, and the patella increases the leverage of the tendon of the rectus femoris, so it assists us in walking. So it gives the tendon of the rectus femoris a biomechanical advantage to have the patella there. Now when we look at the patella and the tibia together, we see the patella is a triangular sesamoid bone. Remember, oid meant like, and sesame seed, so it's like a sesame seed. So it's like a sesame seed, it looks like one. It's a big, huge sesame seed. But you can sort of fantasize that it does look like a sesame seed. And remember that the sesamoid bones have two qualities. One quality is going to be, they're going to always look like sesame seeds. The other quality is that they're going to be found in tendons or ligaments. So that being the case, then we have this patella actually embedded in the tendon of the quadriceps muscle. Another sesamoid bone would be the pisiform bone in our hand. Now the tibia is going to be thick and strong, and it's going to be a good weight-bearing bone because it's going to be exactly right in line with your, or semi-in line anyways, with your femur. That's going to assist then in weight-bearing. It's got a broad superior head with two flat articular surfaces. We call them the medial and lateral condyles. These medial and lateral condyles will be fitting into the condyles of the femur. Medial and lateral, same. We also have a roughened anterior surface that can be palpated below the patella, and that's going to be the tibial tuberosity. This tibial tuberosity, which is going to be in the anterior portion of the tibia, is going to be important for the attachment of the quadriceps tendon. Then distally in the tibia, we have a bone that's going to be, or portions of the tibia that stick out medially on both of our ankles. And we notice that this protuberance is going to be called the medial malleolus. So the medial malleolus is going to be part of the tibia, whereas when we look at the fibula, that's going to also have a protuberance. protuberance from our ankle, and that bone sticking out laterally is going to be called the lateral malleolus. Now, the fibula is going to be a slender lateral strut that helps to stabilize the ankle. It does not bear any weight, so the fibula lies about its weight. It fibs. The head is, of course, going to be at the proximal end, whereas the distal end is going to be that lateral malleolus. It's going to be joined to the tibia by the interosseous membrane, not unlike what we saw with the ulna and the radius, where we had that interosseous membrane. So this is going to assist in the same thing, keeping the two bones together, allowing for blood vessel transport, and in addition, of course, it's going to assist in shock absorbing, such as when we walk and when we run. Now the foot. The foot, as if we think about the foot sort of being like the hand, there's distinctions, however. We have 7 tarsal bones, whereas in the hand we have 8 carpal bones. But we do have the same number of metatarsals as we do metacarpals, and we have the same number of phalanges. So there is a little bit of correlation. Now the 7 tarsal bones are going to be, of course, bigger than the carpal bones. They constitute the ankle, and they share the weight associated with walking. The 5 metatarsals are going to be contained in the foot itself, and the 14 phalanges in the toes. Now, the ankle and foot, we have the 3 cuneiforms that are going to be part of the tarsal bones. We also have 1 navicular, we have 1 cuboid, we have a talus, and we also have a calcaneus. So the navicular is going to be looking just like a navy hat. So picture that there are 3 cute navy guys with navy hats, with 1 navy hat, because they're cute, they're cuneiforms. And we name the cuneiforms from medial to lateral. So you have a medial, an intermediate, and a lateral cuneiform. Or we can name them for their metatarsal. First metatarsal would have the first cuneiform. Second metatarsal will have the second cuneiform. Third metatarsal will have the third cuneiform. So those are really 2 ways that we can name them. Then, of course, coming off the cuneiforms, as we said, we have the cute guys with their navicular, with their hat, their navy hat. The next 2, or shall we say lateral 2, the third cuneiform as well as the navicular, is going to be our cuboid, and our cuboid looks like a big cube. Go further posterior, and then we meet our talus bone. Our talus is going to be the tallest of the tarsal bones. So when you're in lab, you take the foot and just put it down so the toes are on the table, and you'll see that the highest bone, or the tallest, is going to be the talus. This forms the ankle joint with the tibia and the fibula. Remember that you have the tibia with its medial malleolus, and you have the fibula with your lateral malleolus, and then you have your talus between them, creating the ankle. We call it the ankle mortis. Okay. So the talus is going to be sitting upon the calcaneus and articulating with the navicular. The calcaneus is going to be our heel bone. It's going to be the most posterior of the bones of the foot. And it's going to be attached to the Achilles tendon. So the muscles of the back of the leg, the gastrocnemius and the soleus, will be attaching to the Achilles tendon. This tendon then will be attaching to the calcaneus. The Achilles tendon is also called a calcaneal tendon. It's named the Achilles tendon after the Greek god Achilles. He wasn't a god, was he? Was Achilles a god? No, he was a god, yeah. He was a god. And if you were to, well, actually half man, half god, I think he was. But if you were to read the old mythology, such as the Ilium, for instance, or sorry, not the Ilium, that's the anatomical part, the Iliad, to read the Iliad by Homer, you would meet Achilles, and he's a warrior. And the idea was is that Achilles was dipped into a river, and the river gave him invincibility, except for the area where he was actually held. Where he was held was by the Achilles tendon. And that was his downfall. That was, quote, his Achilles heel. So that's why we call this the Achilles tendon, sort of after that story. Now, the golden arches are going to be the arches that you've always heard of. A person has, for instance, flat feet. They have fallen arches. You may have heard of that. The patellar surface of the foot does not normally rest flat on the ground, but rather we have this arch that's occurring between our anterior part of our foot and then the posterior part, our calcaneus. So it's usually an arch that's being created. And really it's not just one arch, but three arches. We have a medial longitudinal and a lateral longitudinal arch, and also a transverse arch. Of most significance is the medial longitudinal arch. Medial longitudinal arch is really going to be maintained by where the calcaneus is positioned. If the calcaneus is positioned one way or the other, medial or lateral, it's going to be affecting that medial longitudinal arch. So if you picture the calcaneus actually going laterally, that's going to increase the arch, or increase the medial longitudinal arch. But if you picture the calcaneus going more medial, that's going to flatten out that arch. So the medial longitudinal arch is really the arch we talk about when a person says they have fallen arches. They mean the medial and lateral longitudinal as well as the transverse arch, but really the medial longitudinal arch is really the one of significance. To look at anatomically what we're talking about as far as these arches are concerned, if we go back to looking at the different bones, you can see that there's a calcaneus, and then you can see that there's the talus. Now the talus has an area where it's going to go right with the cuboid bone. You'll see that the talus goes right into the cuboid. That cuboid then is going to have two bones with it, the fourth and the fifth metatarsal. Now, the cuboid articulating with the fourth and fifth metatarsal tells us that that's going to be our lateral longitudinal arch. The medial longitudinal arch will be all the other bones, including the calcaneus. The calcaneus is going to be part of both the medial and lateral longitudinal arches. So if we picture just the calcaneus and the cuboid and the fourth and fifth metatarsal, that's going to be our lateral longitudinal arch. So the medial really is of more significance, as you see, because it's going to be most of the foot, and also it's going to be really sort of creating that inside arch that you see, for instance, when you get your foot wet and you walk on concrete, you can see, or when you're on the beach, you can see your arch. So major ligaments of the foot is going to be the plantar ligament. And the plantar ligament is going to be going from the calcaneus into the metatarsals, into the anterior portion of our foot. So that's a major ligament. And what happens when an individual has a problem with their arches and they start to flatten, well, then that's going to put pressure on that ligament, compressing the nerves that are underneath that ligament. And the individual can get pain called plantar fasciitis. Now the function of the arches should be obvious. If we have an arch, it's going to be sort of like a spring, so it's going to support the weight. And also it's going to provide leverage, though, while walking. So usually what we do is when we walk, we have a heel strike, so we're going to go down on our calcaneus. We're then going to go laterally on our foot, so that we're going to be going out to our small toe. And then all the toes are going to come down, including our big toe. And then we're going to have a push-off. So you can see that parts of this whole mechanism is going to be, certainly the arch is going to be important for this walking. But also the small toe is very significant. Because as we have heel strike, we go down on that small toe. So if that small toe is not working properly or is fractured or whatever else, that's really going to change our gait, and that's really going to affect us, our ability to walk. So even though it's a small toe, it's big. Now, as far as foot pathology, we already talked a little bit about plantar fasciitis. That's going to be an inflammation of the plantar ligament. Typically, the symptoms are going to be the individual cannot walk. Initially, let's say they sit down for a while and then they get up, try to walk, and they can't. Until they walk a while, and then the pain tends to leave. Then if they rest for a while, then they get up and they can't walk again. And then when they walk on it for a little bit of a while, then they feel better. And what's going on is there's inflammation, so there's going to be a lot of swelling. So as they are not walking on it, the swelling starts to increase. When they start to walk, then they have to push that swelling out. And as it pushes out with their subsequent walking, of course they feel better, but they still have to take care of the inflammation. And usually the inflammation is going to be due to a problem with the arch. So they want to have their foot supported properly. They might want inserts or something like that to assist in that. Now the flat foot is what we talked about with the fallen arches. It's called pes planus. So that's going to be where the feet are flat, literally. So that's going to be a problem, as we said, with the medial longitudinal arch. We can also have a bone spur, which is going to be a bony spur on the anterior part of the calcaneus. So as you look at the side of the foot, you would see this spur coming out from the calcaneus. Most of the time, this is really not a problem. Most of the time, it's due to a problem with the arch. So really, the posterior part of the foot having problems is really because of the arch, or the anterior part of the foot having problems. Now, a bunion is going to be usually a deformity, and usually due to a problem with bad shoes. In fact, most foot pathology can be related to bad shoes. So there can be a deformity of the distal great toe. Usually what happens is that you get it going laterally. So you have your first metatarsal. It's going to go medial, and then your phalanges then are going to start to go lateral, and that makes that big bulge there that's occurring on the it's called a bunion, and there's different forms of them. Basically half of them are probably due to heredity, the other half are due to bad shoes.